Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And just a few hours ago, President Trump met the three Americans who have been freed, were imprisoned by the regime in North Korea, and now have been freed. They released a statement in advance of the meeting with the president. Mm-hmm. We would like to express our deep appreciation to the United States government, President Trump, Secretary Pompeo, and the people of the United States for bringing us home. We thank God and all our families and friends who prayed for us and for our return. God bless America, the greatest nation in the world, concluded the statement. Three Americans. Two of them were academics, or are academics, I should say, and the other is a businessman. They've been there for just under a couple of years.
Yeah, a couple of years. One has been there longer. He was there during the Obama administration. Then the other two were taken into custody, forced to work at labor camps. So they were in good health. They were in good spirits. They got off the plane, Dan, with the victory sign. Two of the three did. And guess who else was there? Melania. Oh, yeah. She got out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning to go greet them with President Trump. They boarded the plane, spoke with the Americans, and then they all deplaned together, and it was quite a moment.
Proudest achievement will be, this is a part of it, but will be when we denuclearize that entire peninsula. This is what people have been waiting for a long time. Nobody thought we could be on this track in terms of speed. So I'm very honored to have helped the three folks. They're great people. You know, I got to speak to them on the plane. These are great people. They've been through a lot, but it's a great honor. But the true honor is going to be if we have a victory in getting rid of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and there's no question. This is an accomplishment for the Trump administration. Yeah. Any hostage release is, Bo Bergdahl wasn't. Any hostage release of non-deserters and without an exchange of releasing terrorists into the wild is a victory for any presidential administration. And also, I note Trump did not take the bait, did not take the D.C. press corps' Nobel bait.
No, he did not. But they did ask him. And, of course, he responded.
Do you deserve the Nobel Prize, do you think?
Everyone thinks so, but I would never say it.
No.
You know what I want to do? I want to get it finished. The prize I want is victory for the world, not for even here. I want victory for the world because that's what we're talking about. So that's the only prize I want.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, oh, how about that?
Only prize I want. So Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, he stayed behind.
He's been AWOL, according to the New York Times.
No, he was there. He got the prisoners released, put them on a plane. He stayed back to finalize the details between the meeting between President Trump and Kim Jong-un.
Oh, I know what he was doing. Oh, yeah. My point really is that the New York Times, when he was shuttling over to North Korea, Mike Pompeo's AWOL.
They did not.
Like he just got confirmed and he went to Cabo.
Yeah, to an all-inclusive.
It's incredible.
Buffet. Yeah. But President Trump, I mean, he had a bounce in his step. And he should have, because this is a huge accomplishment.
We very much appreciate that he allowed them to go before the meeting. It was sort of understood that we'd be able to get these three terrific people during the meeting and bring them home after the meeting. And he was nice in letting them go before the meeting. I mean, frankly, we didn't think this was going to happen, and it did. So you could say we're a little bit of... It was a very important thing to all of us to be able to get these three great people out.
Good for him.
And Amy, I suppose we should mention the names. I'll let you go ahead and
No. Oh, no.
You don't want.
I know
your,
two of them worked at a Christian university.
Don't you want your too low moment here?
I'm gonna give that to you. You can have it.
Kim Dong Chul, Kim Hak Song, and Kim Sang Duk.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Too Low,
right.
Ho Lee Fook, and Bang Ding Ao.
Bang Ding Ao.
The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214.
And if you can't believe the NTSB and you're a local television reader, who can you believe?
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
There's Thomas R. Dan and Amy and talking about the release of those three American hostages, President Trump meeting them in the wee hours this morning. And I thought it was also a nice touch that he mentioned Otto Warmbier.
Yeah.
Who, of course, remember his parents being at the State of the Union address and him memorializing Otto Warmbier there as well. But there are people that he didn't mention that he should have. Tony on the South Side, of course, he is known in Chicago as the man who gave President Trump the moniker Tangerine Jesus. Tony on the South Side wants to remember others who were instrumental in this.
Okay.
Tony?
That is correct, Dan. I sure do. Hey, before I get to that, though, you know what? Tangerine Jesus, this is a great start for him. If he can get Kimmy Un's firework factory shut down, then that's it. He's Tangerine Jesus. Anyway, here's the thing. Who's this Pompeii guy? This deserter to Cabo.
Pompeo.
What's he doing? That was Jesse Jackson's job to get those people out of there. Come on now.
Yeah.
What's going on?
That's true.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving credit where credit's due, Tony.
Well, Dan, while you were gone, we had Reverend Jackson on.
I heard.
Yes. The phone line wasn't too good on his part. But that's what he was joining us because he was planning on going to North Korea to try and get them out.
Let's give him credit anyway. Well, did he ever go?
No.
Oh, well, it's...
It's just last week.
It's like a Lifetime Achievement Award. What about Trump's apprentice, Dennis Rodman? Doesn't he get credit in all this, too?
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
For distributing honor and credit.
Yeah.
Chuck and Delavan.
Hi, Chuck and Delavan. My grandfather was born in 1889, and there was a lot of things happened in his lifetime. But one thing he did tell me was he never trust anyone who eats a dog. Thank you.
Who
okay.
what?
Okay.
I didn't hear him.
Never trust anyone who eats a dog.
Oh.
His grandfather gave him that advice. And that's why Chuck O'Dolvin grew up into the man that he is today.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Let freedom ring this afternoon at 2 with Sean Hannity. Right before Joe Walsh at 5 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So Trump's nominee for CIA director, Gina Haspel, before the Senate yesterday, and I noted that she came with her own cheering section.
Marietina! 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 You are a torturer! Marietina!
So let's go back.
Senator Harris, please.
Oh, stop it.
Wait your turn.
There was a crazy lady in a red shirt and jeans who... I thought she was yelling something else at first, and then I figured out she was yelling Bloody Gina. Because, you know, that's her name, and she claims in charge of torturing people in some remote room in Thailand.
Right. Of course, this is what dominated the hearings, though, to no great effect. I'll tell you what. Here's my proposal for a deal. What I've said if I was Gina Haspel.
Okay.
I will commit to not restarting any enhanced interrogation program at CIA if you all commit to stop these TV interrogations you call confirmation hearings. How about that? That's fair. Because these confirmation hearings are torturous. These senators are, it's a clown show other than for people to use Gina Haspel or whoever the nominee is for whatever post to make a point to the other side about their hypocrisy, like Tom Cotton did. It's a legitimate point. But with respect to Gina Haspel being at CIA, during the time that enhanced interrogation was used on Al-Qaeda suspects in the early 2000s. There were other people at CIA who went on to big jobs in the government, like CIA director, like Obama's CIA director, John Brennan, something Tom Cotton wanted to point out.
These programs were, to the best of your understanding, approved by the commander-in-chief, legally approved by the attorney general, and supported by the director of the CIA, who I point out at the time was the former Democratic staff director of this committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
You said that you were not a senior manager when those programs were created. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was John Brennan, a member of the Senior Intelligence Service and the deputy executive director at the time, a senior manager, in your opinion?
Senator, I believe Mr. Brennan was the deputy exter of the agency at that time.
And you'd consider that a senior manager position at the CIA?
I believe it's a number four position.
For John Brennan, who was confirmed to be the CIA director by the following members of this committee: Senator Warner, Senator Feinstein, Senator Heinrich, Senator Collins, Senator King, Senator Burr, Senator Manchin, Senator Wyden, and Senator Rubio.
At least Manchin's, well, the others, some of those others will be too, but... Manchin's being consistent. Joe Manchin announcing he is going to vote to confirm Gina Haspel, which sort of takes the air out of Rand Paul and John McCain's balloon.
Yeah, well, John McCain, obviously a prisoner of war for 5 years. He's not standing behind her, and he's urging others not to confirm this nomination for her to head the CIA. I don't think Senator McCain's going to change his mind. I don't think he's going to be here to be voting and deciding. But the highlight for me yesterday was the exchange between Haspel and Kamala Harris. Did you hear this one?
Do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred...
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking do you believe they were
immoral
legal.
Or
I'm
immoral?
Asking do you believe they were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA
it's
did extraordinary
yes no
work to prevent another attack on this country given the legal tools that we were authorized
Please
to use.
Please answer yes or no. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please
to.
Answer the question?
No, I just did. That's
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
Sand.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
I mean... Good Kamala for- Harris should be celebrating that this could be the first woman ever to head the CIA.
No.
The P-hat lady should be celebrating that the glass ceiling may be shattered soon.
Yeah, you can't shatter something that doesn't exist. But, yeah, even Haspel pointed that out in preparation for pandering to the identity politics crew represented by the Democrat senators. So that focus, Kamala Harris is a good example of it. Here's how they twist themselves into knots in order to try and make a point, have a gotcha moment, get on TV, make an impression on TV. Jack Reed, Democrat from Rhode Island, he picked up on Kamala Harris's line of inquiry.
Oh, no. What did he do?
And he tried to do a little bit of jujitsu rather than just asking her straight away, is torture immoral, essentially. What would you say if a CIA officer was tortured?
If one of your operatives were captured, subjected to waterboarding and enhanced interrogation techniques, which you, I believe, supervise, would you consider that to be moral, since perhaps the other entity did not have legal restrictions, and good tradecraft, as you appeared to do when you were involved in it previously?
Senator, I don't believe the terrorists follow any guidelines or civilized norms or the law. CIA follows the law.
Excuse me, madam. You seem to be saying that you were not following civilized norms and the law or anything else when you were conducting those self-same activities, if that's the analogy you're going to draw.
Senator, I'm sorry. Can you read? I can't.
Very simple. You have an operations officer who is captured. He's being waterboarded. I've asked you very simply, would you determine that to be immoral and something that should never be done, condoned in any way, shape, or form? Your response seems to be that civilized nations don't do it, but uncivilized nations do it, or uncivilized groups do it.
The United States does it.
A civilized nation was doing it until it was outlawed by this Congress.
Senator, I would never obviously support inhumane treatment of any CIA officers. We've lost CIA officers over the years to terrorists. I just gave an example. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed personally killed a Wall Street Journal correspondent and filmed that. I don't think there's any comparison between CIA officers serving their country, adhering to U.S. law, and terrorists who, by their very definition, are not following anybody's law.
And that shut Jack Reed up, as it should. The comparison is absurd, of course. And as it pertains to the rule of law, Jack Reed glossed over the fact that agree or disagree with the enhanced interrogation program. The Attorney General in the United States weighed in and suggested it was within the bounds of legality what was being done. You can argue about it. Sure you can. But the impression Jack Reed and Kamala Harris and some of the other Democrats want you to have is that Gina Haspel was running some kind of rogue operation or part of a rogue operation at CIA. It wasn't. So you want to argue the substance of it, fine, but let's give the full picture of the information and opinions of the law that Gina Haspel was operating under at the time.
Right. I mean, she was working with George W. Bush administration in their interrogation program. And she was at a CIA chamber in Thailand. Was she doing the waterboarding personally herself? No. But she was there and that she was giving the orders from higher ups to get information out. And it was
she brought up Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, blind Sheikh or Sheikh.
Sheikh.
What do you prefer?
I like Sheikh.
Sheikh or Sheikh?
I like Sheikh.
All right, the blind Sheikh.
I can sing you a song later.
Not to be confused with the Iron Sheikh from WW.
Oh, that's right, WWF.
Infamy.
Is he gone? Is he transitioned?
He's still around.
Is he still alive?
He's still alive, I believe. But just to note that, so the blind Sheikh and John McCain are on the same page when it comes to Gina Haspel. He's also the blind Sheikh. Suggested Gina Haspel shouldn't be confirmed as CIA director.
Well, it's John McCain, Senator McCain, excuse me, said Ms. Haspel's role in overseeing the use of torture by Americans is disturbing. Her refusal to acknowledge torture's immorality is disqualifying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jack Reed continued.
Oh, yes. Jack. Back to Jack.
He had some questions for soon-to-be Director Haspel. Like, have you ever been alone in a room with POTUS?
You've been working with the administration now 15 months. You've had the opportunity to brief the president. Have you ever been alone with the president?
Senator, I'm usually there with Senator Coates, a brilliant analyst who delivers the actual analytic briefing, and usually the national security advisor, the vice president.
And his wife.
There have been allegations, Mr. Comey, one, that while he was alone, the president asked for a personal pledge of loyalty. If you were ever approached by the president and asked for a personal pledge of loyalty, what would you respond?
Senator, my only loyalty is to the American people and the Constitution of the United States. I am honored bound and will work very hard to deliver to this president and his administration the best performance and intelligence CIA can deliver.
And if you were approached in such a way and such a demand was made of you, would you inform this committee and the Congress that you had been so approached?
Senator, I've worked very closely with this president. I don't believe that such a circumstance would ever occur. CIA has been treated with enormous respect, and our expertise is valued for what we bring to the table.
If it occurred, would you inform the committee?
Senator, it's a hypothetical. I don't think it's going to occur. I'm very confident about that.
It does not seem to be a hypothetical. People have alleged that that has happened already.
Senator, I don't know anything about that conversation.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry,
Jack.
Senator, you're not going to get your moment in the sun.
Senator, it's time for your nap. Jack,
to go back to the home. You got to have to go have your Jello.
Jack, stop it.
Silly.
Go back to Providence and leave this business to the adults, please.
Oh my God.
Bill and McHenry, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, guys. Thank goodness for C-SPAN, because we were able to watch the unedited version of the hearings yesterday. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how the media won't play Tom Cotton's excerpts, where he basically states that this is cheap theater and really putting the Democrats on the other side of the wall here. It's a situation where senators get some really cheesy FaceTime. And bottom line is, if she's not confirmed, she's still running the CIA as the deputy director. And thank goodness for that.
Well, thanks for the call, Bill.
Even Democrats, you know, doubt they could stop her.
And, you know, thank you for watching C-SPAN, Bill, as well.
Was he watching The Deuce, C-SPAN 2, or was it on C-SPAN 1?
I don't know, because I would rather be waterboarded than watch these confirmation hearings.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and CNN Money Show reporting this story about our parent company, Salem Media Group. We want to address here. Salem executives pressure radio hosts to cover Trump more positively, email show. CNN story. Former host employed by Salem, Alicia Krauss.
Oh, yeah, I know
Alicia. We were with her in Cleveland at the convention.
Yeah, right.
Lovely lady.
So she, in L.A., she was. Says,
yeah, she was on with Ben Shapiro, and then they blew up that morning show, and now they have a new crew.
Right. She's now saying it's. She feels it's disingenuous to ostensibly hire hosts to be open about their views, only to pressure them behind the scenes to change, which is what she said happened to her. Salem executives, according to Alicia Krauss, pressured her to change how she treated Trump. The cross that she praised Trump when she felt he deserved it, it ultimately wasn't enough. She was shell-shocked when a casual meeting with a company executive turned into her dismissal, declining to discuss the details of her severance. But the matter has been settled. And as you mentioned, she was on with Shapiro on KRLA in L.A., and now they're not. The email.
They went to go spend more time with their family.
Because
when I leave too, I'm going to say, I need to spend more time with my family. But right. My family doesn't want to spend more time with me.
They're not down with it. The response from our boss, Phil Boyce, was... to say that Krauss was not let go because of her position on Trump. It shouldn't surprise anybody that Salem radio hosts often support conservative candidates in election, saying the company, which operates, of course, Regnery Publishing and others, does a lot of research on what our audience wants. And so I just wanted to comment on this with respect to Alicia Krauss and this, you know, the idea that they're trying to kind of Sinclair Salem, right? Everybody's reading from the same script. Doing it, they'll do a mashup of all the talk show hosts or something next. I'm sure CNN will do to try and undermine any conservative media outlet or company. So I'll tell you my personal experience. and that is no one at Salem, locally or at the corporate level, has ever told me what to say, what to think, how to say something. Have they given us market research on our audience? Yeah, because that's what a good business would do. You want to be responsive to your target audience? Is that a revolutionary idea? Hardly. Nobody has ever done that. So, and by the way, if you look across the lineup at Salem, think about nationally for starters, Michael Medved is a never Trumper. He went so far as to say he was voting for Hillary Clinton.
But didn't that cost him some stations?
The issue is not if there's consequences to that because there's a reaction from the audience. The issue is, was Michael Medved being directed to, you must say this, read from this script? Of course not. Of course not.
I mean, they let us know what, you know, I've been here 8 years and they let us know what political candidate they're supporting, but they don't say you have to vote for Mitt Romney. I remember we had a meeting and they said, we're just letting you know that we are, as a company, supporting Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
It's fine because I voted for Mitt Romney. I love Mitt Romney. I'm like, sure.
Well, and the company has a PAC.
Yeah.
So it's putting people on notice.
Did you pay the PAC yet? Got to pay the PAC.
And so, but there, you know, Gallagher, our friend Gallagher, going to have at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. He's probably more pro Trump than certainly I am. So what?
I commend President Trump when he does something well. What happened at 2 o'clock this morning, bringing those three Americans home? That was a huge accomplishment. But when he does things that are stupid, when he tweets things without thinking before he tweets, yeah, I come down hard on him.
Right.
And so do you.
So I'm not you, and
you're
and,
not me.
And I'm not Prager, and Medved's not Prager, and Larry Elder's not Medved, and Gallagher's not Hewitt. I mean, so just understand this, CNN is pretending that they have some kind of bombshell here. They don't. They apparently have one disgruntled former talk show host, a local talk show host in L.A., Ms. Krause. And, you know, the backstory there a little bit, I think, had very little to do with her being critical of Trump, you know, being intermittently critical of Trump, and much more to do with how that show was performing. And, you know, frankly, I know a little bit about the situation out there.
And we talked about it, too, because some of the research we heard about their research audience.
Yeah, you do. I mean, so as part of thinking about your audience and trying to appeal to your audience and serve your audience, there's going to be big market comparisons that are made too, Chicago to Dallas to New York. So we're privy to some of that. I'm not going to go into detail on it, but the bottom line is, if this story tries to get amplified beyond CNN money, I just wanted to address it straight away so you know that Amy's opinions are her own, my opinions are her own. Nobody's pressuring us locally or at the corporate level to say anything. And this is just a way to try and undermine conservative media outlet. That's all this story is. But let's address it straight away so there's no sense that, oh, we're hiding or we don't want to address it or we're not being allowed to talk about it. Just more evidence that nothing could be further from the truth.
This is The Morning Show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and we didn't get to this, but this is important, I know, because, Amy, you're one of those people who defrauds the public with the service dog.
That's not true. I have high blood pressure, and I have a heart condition, and I got a note from my cardiologist.
Uh-huh.
So,
you got a note from Epstein's mom saying,
you know, Dr. Duguid, he's at the corner.
Yeah.
He's at Wabash in 18th.
You have that same crackpot, long-haired hippie doctor that Trump has.
Yeah. The guy who said he got raped came and took my records. They raped me.
Boy.
Oh, boy, the cast of characters. Well, you know what? And I take my dog all the time. And before, this is the weirdest thing because I hate turbulence. And I know I should grow up and not be afraid of it like a little schoolgirl.
Well.
But before it starts, she knows. And she jumps on my lap and hugs me right here. And then turbulence begins. It's the weirdest thing. And then she gets down right before it ends. I'm not kidding you.
Okay.
I'm going to document this on my next adventure with Bunky.
Okay.
Bunky's been everywhere. She's been to Alcatraz. Not, I think two dogs have been to Alcatraz. She was in front of Capone's cell.
Mm-hmm.
She's the Adventures of Bunky. Well, she was surfing in St. Croix.
No, I mean, I'm glad that Bunky gets
eating bonbons.
I'm glad that she gets to travel. The issue is more why she's traveling.
Well, bulldogs cannot be checked. Have never been allowed to be English bulldogs, I should say.
Yeah,
I don't know about Americans. Well, but they can't be checked underneath in the cargo area.
I think you're one step up from the service peacock, frankly. But that's okay.
I was going to get a service squirrel, but I just couldn't get the leash around its neck, you know?
If it's good enough for United and Dr. Dow, then it's good enough for me. United's policy, new policy, in light of that pug that got suffocated?
First of all, it's a French bulldog that was a few weeks old.
Wasn't it a pug?
No, it was not a pug. You got to know your difference. They kind of look alike, but it was a French bulldog, a $6,000 bulldog, by the way.
Mm.
Family has hired an attorney.
Oh, imagine.
Traumatic.
So here are the dog breeds. 507,000 animals flew on U.S. commercial carriers in 2017. 24 died, 18 of those deaths happening on United.
Yeah, nice United. Wow. Pet killers.
So they're addressing this by banning the transport of most breeds of dogs. No, banning a lot, though.
What are they banning? Golden Retrievers?
Affin's Pincher? Oh. Never heard of that. What's that?
Affin's Pincher?
Affin.
Affin
Pincher?
Pincher.
Oh. American Bully. American Bully.
Oh, yeah. American Bulldog.
American Pitbull Terrier, Pitbull.
Ooh, the Affin Pincher is a very unique looking creature.
Boxer, bulldog, all kinds of bulldogs. Because, you know.
Letting boxers on? Because well, they're
all slimy, you know, asthmatic. Yeah. All the various breeds and subbreeds of mastiffs. Because, you know, it's tough to have like a 200-pound dog on the plane, I suppose.
I did not think they would ban mastiffs.
Pug, Shih Tzu.
Watch yourself.
Exactly. Tibetan Spaniel.
Wait, a Tibetan Spaniel. I got to Google that.
Yeah.
Tibetan, common spelling.
That was the name of your high school band. It was a Spandau Ballet cover band, wasn't it? Tibetan Spaniel. Cat breeds also burn.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't touch my putty tat.
Burmese, exotic short hair, Himalayan, and Persian cat breeds are all banned on United. I don't know why. Hmm. What's the difference?
Well,
you're the cat whisperer. What's the difference?
I don't know. Their noses must be pushed into their face. It must have to do with the breeding problem. But I don't know why everybody hates the bulldogs.
Consider the bulldog, a grotesque monstrosity born of relentless inbreeding, riddled with sinusitis, crippled by joint pain, chronically flatulent.
That's so true.
A kindly pet or humanity's cruelest mistake? All right, take it away. Ladies and gentlemen, just like that horrible creature, the entire nucleus program was the result of inbreeding. We mated Hooli engineers with Hooli designers in a Hooli kennel. Is it any wonder the result was just as unspeakable as that thing? Bring it back here. Look at that hideous face. All right, get it out of here.
That was the CEO of United Airlines announcing the policy.
And you can hear the bulldog in the background. They all sound the same.
All right, so you're on notice then. You just have to buy a seat for her?
No, she sits on my
just,
lap.
So she's small enough that can
500 pounds of her.
It's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. She likes the window seat, too. She likes to look out.
Yeah.
She calms me down.
Just
I'm not going to have a stroke because of her.
Just everybody understand, you're subsidizing.
Oh, here we go.
You're subsidizing Amy's phony baloney service dog.
No, I'm not.
No. Everybody else is subsidizing yours.
Why do I have to pay for it?
That's built into the ticket prices.
No, it's not. It is not built into the
You have to have.
I filled out the proper form. I had to jump through. It's not easy to have a service dog. You're going to spend a long time filling out all the forms.
Yeah, Dr. Nick Riviera fills out your.
The guy at Warby.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hey, everybody.
I just hate when people ask. Because one time I had glasses on and I looked like I was blind. I was visually impaired walking with her. I can't remember what airport it was, and people were moving out of the way. You're like, oh, I think she can't see.
Right. So in addition to faking this anxiety stuff, you're faking being blind. It's disgusting. Mike on the north side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer. Mike.
Mike.
Mike on the north side has disappeared.
Oh, Mike doesn't want to play anymore.
So are you gonna fly United? Are you going to be back now that they've righted the ship?
No.
Kelly, no?
I mean, what, 28 dogs died last year? 18 were on United. Remember they sent a dog to Japan by accident that was supposed to end up in Kansas? And the dog they then gave...
That dog will travel. Blue highways for that dog. Skyways.
The dog got his own private jet from... He was sitting... Like, he had a private jet. He was in a Citation 8, which is a pretty nice plane, but by himself and one handler and two pilots. And they put him and got him back to this country.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. If you'd like to opine on the United Airlines new pet shipping policy, Amy's fraudulent at taking an advantage of these policies, or if you still want to talk about Dr. David Dow, or if you want to talk about the disappearance of MH370 like Don Lemon does. Anyway, we'll take any of those.
I have to go home. I have to go home. I have to go home. I have to go home.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Hey, did you see this? Monica Lewinsky, who still can't find a fella.
Oh,
she was, she was uninvited from Town & Country Magazine's Philanthropy Summit.
Yeah, I heard. Oh, but tell everybody.
Fair.
Tell everybody why. That's pretty serious to be uninvited.
Monica told us why. Dear world, please don't invite me to an event, especially one about social change. And then, after I've accepted, uninvite me because Bill Clinton then decided to attend. It's 2018. Emily Post would definitely not approve. Well, she's got a sense of humor about it. And P.S. And definitely please don't try to ameliorate the situation by insulting me with an offer of an article in your mag, Lewinsky added about to Town & Country. Town & Country did not respond to inquiries about that. Monica Lewinsky taking another one on the chin.
Yeah, well, why do you say she can't find a man? It would probably be hard to date Monica Lewinsky.
Right.
But she's a lovely woman. I think she's pretty.
I feel badly for her.
She was taken advantage of. One of the most powerful men in the world assaulted her.
Well, assaulted. She was of age, obviously, but
it depends on what is.
Well,
wasn't that the
disparity in power in that relationship in that context. Had it not been a favorite of the left at the time, and to some extent still, Town & Country Magazine's Philanthropy Summit, there would have been zero tolerance for any excuses, apologies, even accounting for it. But because the left doesn't have principles, it has interests. Bill Clinton got a pass, and Monica Lewinsky had her life forever altered, and generally negatively. So I feel bad for Monica Lewinsky. Bill Clinton's a predatory scumbag, but not according to Town & Country.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Some call me the sage from South Central. Others call me the czar of common sense. But you can call me Larry Elder. And you're invited to join me tonight, starting at 7, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and just picking up on a little bit of the state of Illinois. Yesterday, I'm still just aghast at this story that Mike Scott reported. The Peoria murder trial that is delayed a week because the Illinois Department of Corrections said it was short of gas money to transport a witness to trial, to testify.
I mean, that somebody can't just go pick him up or her up.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a sad state of affairs when you can't even afford the gas
money. You need to set up like a carpool. This is like Dunkirk. You need private citizens to fill in where government can't. Not quite as heroically here, but set up some kind of voluntary carpool to transport witnesses to and from correctional institutions in the state to courthouses where they're needed, because the state can't afford gas money. And you know what the motto of the Illinois justice system is, Amy. Better 1,000 guilty men go free than one politician's idiot nephew have his pension impaired or diminished.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So this is where this ends. Short of gas money.
How much is gas in Peoria too? Probably like $2.50.
You maybe take up a collection.
Maybe have a bake sale. Hey, how about a car wash?
Yeah.
That'll get you some gas money. Get you some pocket change so you can bring your witness to court. I'm laughing because it's so sad.
It's
pathetic and just the state that we live in.
Well, it's just a great commentary on the state of the state. This is also a great commentary on the state of the political culture. Underreported story and poorly reported story by Bill Rothard in the Chicago Tribune. It's just so lacking in context here. It's just like this one of these stories, like, the former head of the Chicago Federation of Labor is going over to a private equity firm. Oh, yeah, it's just like a kind of who's who, what's going on in Chicago, how it's reported.
How'd he get that job?
Chicago Federation of Labor president, former Jorge Ramirez, who, is essentially part of the ownership group of the Chicago Sun-Times. Mm-hmm. The AFL-CIO Times. He's been tapped by Michael Sachs, one of Tiny Dancer's closest friends and key financiers, to join GCM Grosvenor as a managing director, leading the firm's strategies to partner with labor unions as it looks to invest in infrastructure projects around the country. Jorge Ramirez going to an asset management firm that he would otherwise, in his previous life, term a predatory capitalist scum, right? But
now they can help him financially, so, it's all right.
Right, and this is the whole point of the political culture, right? This is all play acting. This is all play acting. This is principles up for auction. And also, the position that Ramirez is in with respect to Tiny Dancer's reelection campaign, per his ownership stake at Sun-Times. Nobody talks about that. Media, city hall, media, state capital collusion. That's all over the place in this city and state. It's just remarkable. And the story barely reported. Barely reported. As Tiny Dancer ramps up his campaign with Tony Preckwinkle impersonator Lori Lightfoot announcing her candidacy for mayor today.
She is.
Triple threat.
That's what she said.
She's a triple threat.
What's a triple threat again?
She's a black, female, and lesbian.
Oh.
So that's why
we should vote for her?
Apparently.
Because she's a black, female, lesbian.
Well, that's why how she described herself as a triple threat.
Okay.
So, identity politics. Now she's a successful attorney.
Yeah, don't you like her?
Former prosecutor. I don't agree with her, but I think she's, smart. But she's, way left. Successful attorney in private practice. Former prosecutor. Was on that police board, Star Chamber, that Tiny Dancer put together. And yet the triple threat has nothing to do with her professional qualifications or accomplishments. It's just all about her identity. That's Chicago. That's the 21st century Democrat Party. And what of the 21st century Republican Party in Illinois, such as it continues to exist? It barely does. There's a fight over the next state party chairman. Normally the state party chairman, the governor or the gubernatorial nominee, it's just like whoever that governor wants, that's who he gets for state party chairman. I mean, it's usually not controversial. These are different times, as happens when you have a enemy inside your perimeter that is unveiled, and that's the case with former Governor Bruce Rauner.
We stop calling him former governor. Let me guess, is Diana Rauner want to be it?
No. Tim Schneider, the Cook County Commissioner who can't seem to find his way to pay his property taxes, which is perfect for the Illinois Republican Party. Just perfect of what they say and then what they actually do. The Rauner Party, the Donner Party. So the Donner Party, so it's Diana and Bruce, right?
Donner.
But then you also have the Donner Party. They're cannibalizing the conservatives and destroying the Republican Party from within. So it works on a couple of levels, which is nice. So Tim Schneider is being challenged by Mark Shaw, who's a attorney up in Lake County, State Central Committeeman
Lake
County
Shaw?
Chairman. Yeah, he's fine, good guy. And so this is actually a fight, and it's even being litigated in terms of seating. I mean, without getting too inside baseball, there's a dispute in the election returns for one of the state central committeemen posts on the state central committee. And so that's being litigated, and the result of that litigation could determine who the next chairman is. So you may have Rauner lose his choice for state party chairman, which is a remarkable occurrence and just speaks to the depths of division that have been created by Rauner, by the Donner Party. Rauner and his paid off flacks like Tim Schneider and others, and you know, the welfare queens in the General Assembly like Durkin and Brady.
Well, I don't like Tim Schneider because he was completely asleep at the wheel when they didn't put anybody in the primary to go up against that Holocaust denier.
Art Jones.
Yeah.
Who's running against Lipinski. That's
how easy.
Right.
They could have put in anybody just to make sure that he did not, you know, have a seat at the table, because that does not help with the reputation of the Republican Party on a national level, because everybody has interviewed Art Jones. They did on CNN. They did on different MSNBC. And we don't need that.
Well,
because he's a crazy man.
Well, you're right. It's absurd. It's absolute.
That is a shame.
It's incompetence. So not only are they liars, and they know it. I mean, that's all they have is to create lies about people.
Was he getting paid for that position?
No. All they have is to create lies about people. Jeannie Ives in the primary, Mike Madigan's favorite Republican, and all that silliness. So they destroy the party from within by the positions they take. That's what Bruce Rauner has done. Then they denigrate conservatives and tell you to get out of the party. That's what Bruce Rauner and his...
Well, Pat Brady said that. I wish you would just leave and go away.
Well, there's somebody who did get paid. There's somebody
Pat
who
Brady
was getting
got paid.
Paid
by Rauner, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Firm
to be his mouthpiece?
A firm that he's an affiliate of. And plus, he's a lobbyist hack, so he's just sidling up to the governor anyway because he roams the halls of Springfield trying to advance the interests of rent-seeking corporations and leftist...
So he's Michael Cohen.
Social engineers. No, he's worse. He's doing the bidding of the other side. Cohen, at least, was selling himself for access to his own side, not selling himself to the other side to undermine his stated side, at least. So anyway, so that's all they have, and now it's going to be visited upon them. Because you can't make up the numbers when you tell the base of the party to go away, when you think here the way to victory is to see how many willfully blind and hopelessly ignorant Republican primary voters can I take advantage of, you know, just enough by 18,000 to hold on to the nomination. Well, that destroys you going into the general. And now you have the prospect of State Senator Sam McCann running an independent conservative third party race against both Spalding and former Governor Bruce Rauner.
I haven't seen Spalding in a while.
So given that landscape and given no path to victory for Bruce Rauner and given the prospect that probably have to spend another $50, $100 million of his own money, can't go dollar for dollar with JB. No. So the big tough guy who's going to, you know, come over the top with money in the House and the Senate, and of course the barking seals like Durkin and Brady love that because that means they don't have to do any work, don't have to think. They're not good at work or thinking. So that
energy.
All this goes away, though. All this goes away in November. So then what do you do? What kind of Republican Party do you have left, if any? Or do you just go the way of California, where the Republican Party effectively ceases to exist? That's a real possibility. So the rumor last week that Rahner may actually step out of the race.
What?
There was a rumor floating around last week that Rahner may actually step out of the race, and it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I'm just reporting it as which is a rumor.
Who was it? A reliable source that told you that? Or
well, it's just it was.
Has people been talking about
it? It was scuttlebutt that there's no path to victory. Everybody sees it, even the people that are clinging to Rahner. That you know, these 22-year-old staffers that run around for Rahner, who just managed to figure their way out of Iowa State and now think they know everything about politics.
Easy.
They can delude themselves, but people who've been around this racket in the city and state know what time it is and know what time it is for Rahner, and the time is midnight. So that plus having to spend all that money that they could otherwise spend on the Italian villa they're going to escape to after they flee the damage they've done, why do it? People have been asking why Rahner even wants to run for re-election since last year. It's almost like inertia rather than purpose. So the idea, Rahner steps out, and this is the name that was being bandied about, Tom Ricketts, president of the Chicago Cubs, steps in. Now, one thing, Rahner doesn't, if he were to step out, just to play this out, he doesn't get to just say, I want Tom Ricketts to replace me, and then it happens. You remember when Jack Ryan left the Senate race in 2004, it was the Republican Party, the State Central Committee, that makes the appointment to replace. So that would be the same thing with the governor.
And
so,
they appointed Alan Keyes.
Oh, yeah, after nobody wanted to do it, by the way. Of course, that's always forgotten. The demise of the Republican Party was in full swing thanks to George Ryan well before that. People don't know their history very well in this state, I understand. So what about that? Rahner steps out. Tom Ricketts, who the reason I don't believe this, I'm not convinced at all that Rahner would do something like that. And I'm not convinced at all that Tom Ricketts would want to do something like this. He's like the guy who's tried to stay away from politics. And now he's going to be a Republican. I mean,
everybody knows they're a Republican family. His brother Peter is governor of Nebraska.
I understand. But Tom has not been political. He's tried to stay away from politics. And now he's going to become the Republican nominee for governor with 6 months to go.
What about Todd? Todd's more political than...
Yeah, but he's the deputy finance chairman for the RNC.
Well, step down and be governor.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, do you buy any of that?
Just hearing of this and this name, so...
312-642-5600, turkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turkey.pro, text line. Tom Ricketts for governor. How about that? What about that? I mean, do you know Tom? I don't.
I don't. I've met him a few times. But, no, I don't know him to be political at all. Maybe he's not because he's running a business in Chicago.
Well, right.
And he doesn't want anything to hurt, you know, the bottom line.
Well, the Cubs aren't going to go away, so he still would be running a business in Chicago. And I'm sure that him being...
And now his new venture to open, you know, it's just begin another soccer team in Chicago, too, in Lincoln Park.
So him being the nominee for the Republican Party for governor, just again, to play this rumor out, what kind of sense does that make for him if business is his concern? You know? I'm just not sure. It just doesn't make any sense.
I mean, the question, could he beat J.B. Pritzker?
I think
everybody loves a winner, and he brought, a winning team to Chicago.
That's not the basis you get elected governor.
No, but
it's the basis you get profile.
Fans,
I don't know what Tom Ricketts believes on a range of issues. I don't know what he thinks should be done policy-wise. I have no idea. Well, that would all have to be fleshed out. And as soon as you start taking positions on issues, which is sort of part of the point of running for political office,
But don't you agree he has a savvy business mind? I mean, look what he did to Wrigleyville. It's a whole new place.
Yeah, I agree. The whole family does, starting with the patriarch, who deserves most of the credit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's just be real about it. Joe.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think the fact that he looks like Ted Cruz would hurt him. Doesn't he?
He looks exactly. It's a doppelganger. They look like twins.
Tom Ricketts for governor.
Phone lines are lighting up.
Todd Ricketts for governor. Laura Ricketts. How about Todd or Tom runs against Laura? JB steps out for Laura, and Rahner steps out for Tom, and then the Ricketts run.
That would be great.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And Donald Trump, President Trump, has brought three American hostages home from North Korea in advance of his sit-down with Kim Jong-un, which is reported to be in the offing and perhaps to take place in Singapore. President Trump with Melania on the tarmac in the wee hours this morning.
Yes, it was very, I mean, it was a hero's homecoming. They had, you know, two hook and ladder fire trucks with a huge American flag. Showcasing the arrival of the aircraft. President Trump, Melania, got on board first, spent some time with the three Americans, and then they deplaned together, and it was a big victory. It was, people were cheering.
Proudest achievement will be, this is a part of it, but will be when we denuclearize that entire peninsula. This is what people have been waiting for a long time. Nobody thought we could be on this track in terms of speed. So I'm very honored to have helped the three folks. They're great people. You know, I got to speak to them on the plane. These are great people. They've been through a lot, but it's a great honor. But the true honor is going to be if we have a victory in getting rid of nuclear weapons.
And I also thought it was nice, even though the parents were at the State of the Union address, and this was a moment to celebrate the three hostages coming home, that President Trump remembered Otto Warmbier.
A great young man who really suffered. And his parents have become friends of ours. They are spectacular people. And I just want to pay my respects.
And it's one of those things because it's not only respectful of Otto Warmbier and his family, but it also signals that President Trump remembers who he's dealing with.
Yep.
Just releasing the three American hostages, who should have never been hostages in the first place, of course, doesn't change who Kim Jong-un is, doesn't change what his regime is. And I think that was a way for him to gracefully signal that he hasn't forgotten who he's dealing with.
Well, what do you think brought the world's worst human rights abuser to the point where he released those three hostages? Well, do you think they're on the brink of bankruptcy? They need food?
They need electricity.
They need right.
We'll put that question to our friend, Mike Gallagher, host of the Mike Gallagher Show, weekdays 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves. He joins us now. Mike, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
My morning show prep. I mean, I'm watching you guys every morning. I see Dan standing there at that microphone. Amy, I don't know how he does it. I mean, my goodness, you sit down like a normal person
Stamina.
To do the radio show,
yeah.
And I get so much wisdom from you guys and enjoyment, you know, when you're and following you when you're off gallivanting in the waves with listeners and going on all these great trips.
I mean,
you know, when I grow up, I want to be like Dan and Amy.
There you go. Damie. An important moment for the president, for this administration, including in what is potentially in the offing, the bigger victory the president referred to, the denuclearization of North Korea, if that could be verified. But nonetheless, you bring hostages home. I don't care what president you are. That's a great moment.
Watching the president be humble is very uncomfortable. It's a very awkward thing to see the president slough off questions about winning the Nobel Prize, Peace Prize. And he says, people want that, but what I want is peace. These moments, guys, where you have a president that cannot really be criticized about anything, coming right on the heels of all of the other drama and garbage, I mean, to absorb as much as we, the American people, are absorbing is pretty overwhelming. I mean, it's all the bad happens over a period of 24 hours, and then you get the next 24 hours, and you have this example of peace through strength. Amy was asking, you know, what led to this? You know, you got a president taking this guy on, calling him Little Rocket Man, threatening him with fire and fury. I mean, you hear all these threats and these promises that this president conveys. That's what, you know, this is like peace through strength in the Reagan era on steroids. And so you see leadership, you see world leadership. Who is going to find fault with a president trying to achieve peace in the world. North and South Korea fighting for decades and decades. We've never seen anything like this before. Then right before this happens, you've got the president withdrawing from this lopsided, dangerous, frankly, Iranian nuclear deal. You have all this great economic news, all this great employment news in the country. I mean, there's so much good that, of course, is accompanied by so much bad. And it's just this drama that I guess we get overloaded. But it was really nice to see just a few minutes, as you said, Amy, with that great greeting. And to see that historic, patriotic, hero's homecoming with the president there and important moments and hitting the right tones, remembering Otto Warmbier. You're right, Dan. This is not a nice regime. And the president knows that. And yet, how about that? We got three prisoners home without having to exchange five terrorists. How about that? We didn't have to send over boatload of $150 billion to get three Americans to come home. I mean, it's just it's been a pretty good 24, 48 hours, guys.
Well, Kim Jong-un wants something, and he's going to want a lot of money to get rid of those nuclear weapons, don't you think?
You're right. Of course he does. But this is where the art of the deal comes in, and this is where a pretty shrewd, savvy commander-in-chief is going to have to navigate these waters. This summit is going to be historic. It's reportedly going to be in Singapore early June. We'll see where it is. The president said this week it's not going to be in the DMZ as
good.
Expected.
Yeah.
But hey, this is where prayer comes in. You pray for peace. You pray that things are going to go well. But you trust but verify. You have a very wary eye. We know we can't trust these guys, but we've gotten a lot farther. There are millions and millions and millions of people in the Korean Peninsula who are sleeping a little easier tonight, knowing that just maybe this guy is going to get reined in. And the credit goes to President Trump. It's fascinating to me to watch the efforts to chip away and take away credit that is entirely due him. I saw an interview last night on Fox News. Somebody was talking about the record low unemployment rate in the black community in America. It's the lowest it's ever been in history, on record. Lowest it's ever been. And I watched the young guest on the TV show say, yeah, well, when that's Obama. Obama gets credit because in his administration it was 17%. The guy literally said on national TV, now that it's at 6.6, Obama dropped it by 10 points. Now, here's a perfect example. This is Trump's economy. These are the economic initiatives of Republicans in Congress with the tax law. And there's a guy saying Obama gets the credit for this. So, some days you just can't win. You just got to keep your head down and keep supporting this country, putting this country first, and hoping and praying for the best.
Yeah, and the 40-year average, actually, black unemployment, 45-year average is 12%. So, I mean, for it to be at 6.5% now is something to know. There's no question. But it speaks to the press corps. And Sarah Sanders took some heat from the press yesterday about Trump's comments about rescinding press credentials for some journalists. And, of course, anytime that he makes a statement like that, you get all of the, how dare you impugn the Fourth Estate? You're trying to eliminate our First Amendment freedom of the press and so on and so forth. And yet the entire press corps was represented on the tarmac when he met the hostages. So, it seems to me like Trump blows off steam by attacking the press with some of their unfair coverage. But there's no evidence to back it up. So the press hysteria actually serves to just further delegitimize them.
It's Lucy in the football. It's Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football. I mean, he puts out a tweet and watches them get hysterical. I think he sits back and chuckles. Now, having said that, I don't know where there's a constitutional guarantee that April Ryan gets to sit in the third row of the White House press briefing every day.
Right.
Where's that in the Constitution? All this hysteria about the First Amendment, or the free speech rights being abridged. How many reporters are in there? 30, 40? There are probably thousands of reporters that want to be in that White House press briefing. Is that censorship? Nobody's suggesting censorship. To hear the pushback that the president got, and I got some yesterday when I said, hey, they should pull the credentials of a reporter who's not really in that room to ask legitimate questions. April Ryan, who wants to attack Melania Trump and say she's not culturally American. That's a smear and insulting her. They want to yank her credential. We're not going to have a constitutional crisis. April Ryan can plop down in front of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and cover her smears on Melania all day long on CNN. There's no censorship issue here whatsoever. But to hear the drama, the melodrama, the pearl clutching from people who go there and think that the world is coming to an end because Trump is jerking their chain a little bit and saying maybe I'll pull credentials was really, really comical. Nobody's advocating censorship. Even the reporters from the New York Times acknowledge how accessible this president is. He talks to them too much, probably. You know, he goes around and talks to all these guys. So there's no censorship issue. Once more, typical overreaction sparked by a tweet, which I believe is by design. He just loves to see the, the disruption that he causes when he throws one of these little bombshells out.
I'm very protective of our First Lady, Melania Trump. What did April Ryan say about her?
She said that, and Amy, I am too, because I think this lady is put through so much just by who she's married to. She had this beautiful initiative to try to protect, she wants to protect kids from opioid abuse, bullying and all that, online bullying. Of course, the obvious, attack is, oh, well, you're married to the Twitter bully and all that. April Ryan on CNN said, well, Melania really isn't culturally American. But she's getting there, and she's learning the ways of America. What, because of her accent, April?
She speaks five languages.
Five languages. This is her fifth language, She's an American citizen, and she loves this country. And that's what I mean. I mean, if the president wants to get protective of his wife and say, April Ryan is writing a book. You go to her Twitter page, you can see she's hawking a book at the top of the page. So these guys want their 15 seconds of sound bites and showboating and grandstanding in the White House press briefing room. Again, pulling a credential from the White House press briefing room is not censorship, and it's not abridging the right of a free press. Nobody's advocating censorship, certainly not me. But they don't get to – that's a privilege to sit in that White House every day. It's not a right.
He is Mike Gallagher, host of The Mike Gallagher Show, which is appropriately named. He is on 9 to 11, following us each morning on these airwaves. Mike, thanks as always for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Love you guys. Keep fighting the good fight. Take care.
Thanks, Mike. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's morning answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hear about the new love, the new romance,
Don Jr.
Okay, wait, yeah,
no,
yeah, no, John Jr. Because he has filed for divorce, so yes, it's
right.
Okay to go out and meet other young women. So guess who he's with?
Monica
Lewinsky. No, this is according to Page Six.
It's the Bible when it comes to couples gossip. Sure.
It is, but it's vetted. They don't just put stuff on Page Six. He's moving from Vanessa to a Fox News host. Care to guess which one?
Tucker Carlson.
Multiple sources exclusively tell Page Six that Don Jr. and Kimberly Guilfoyle, co-hosts of The Five, have been dating for a few weeks. Oof. As his divorce from Vanessa Trump proceeds. One source exclusively told Page Six that Don Jr. and Kimberly are seeing each other and are having a great time. While he wants to respect the privacy of his family while getting divorced, he also truly enjoys Kimberly's company. The new couple has been seen arriving together at a party hosted by Bill White and Brian Urie.
Oh, sure, the White Urie party.
For the President Trump's new ambassador to Germany, blah, 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 who cares? Don Jr. and Guilfoyle mingled with guests but stuck close to each other and later left together, heading for a late-night dinner at Harry Caprini's on Fifth Avenue. Why do I feel dirty reading this?
Oh, boy, it's like
maybe
we're on the
way
dates.
I'm reading it.
Yeah, thank you. Gavin Newsom's ex,
40.
Huh? I would... I'd suggest, after hearing that and thinking about Kimberly Guilfoyle and thinking about his wife, I would advise him to see if he can't reconcile with Vanessa. If that's his fallback position, I'd go back to
Vanessa.
Well,
he's 40, she's 49, former San Francisco and L.A. prosecutor.
Yeah. Gavin Newsom's ex.
Yeah,
Much. Do I need to say anything more than that?
Yeah.
I don't. Candace and DuPage.
Okay, Amy, when you start talking about this, I yelled out Kimberly Guilfoyle because I'm always like, she is so stunning and so smart, and I love her. I don't care what you say, Dan.
I know. I love her, too. She's great.
Painful.
She's gorgeous.
And that is a great excruciating relation. That is, you know what? Listen, Dan, stop, okay?
Yeah, just because you can't have her.
I knew. But listen, you don't want her. I knew that Don Jr.'s wife could not take this pressure, and I knew something was going to happen because she just could not take it. And Kimberly is tough as nails. You can't intimidate her.
Exactly.
So that is the perfect woman for him, especially if he wants to go into politics.
You can't sleep with your chief of staff's wife and get away with it. Not if Kimberly Guilfoyle is your wife. Okay, Candace, thanks for the call.
Candace and I agree on her beauty, her stunning good looks.
Sorry I can't be with you girls on this one.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
You want more than just the headlines? Find out what's going on and what it means with me, Dennis Prager, this morning at 11, right here on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we're talking to Mike Gallagher about this briefly, but this exchange between Sarah Sanders and a member of the D.C. press corps over the latest Trump eruption about the quote-unquote fake news and their inability to provide accurate information to the public, their unwillingness to, their kind of constant attack mode, suggesting that some credentials could be revoked. Here's how Sarah Sanders addressed that.
How is the suggestion of taking American journalists' press credentials away, advocating for a free press in this country? That those two do not go together.
The fact that I'm standing here taking questions, the fact that the president took questions from your colleagues just 2 hours ago, demonstrates this White House's commitment to accessibility and to providing information to the American public. At the same time, the press has a responsibility to put out accurate information. Just yesterday, the New York Times accused the Secretary of State for being AWOL. When he was flying across the globe to bring three Americans home. That is an outrageous claim. Just earlier this week, the Washington Post accused the First Lady of not living in the White House. That outrageous claim was then repeated again in this room. We are here. We are taking questions. We are doing everything we can to provide regular and constant information to the American people. And there is a responsibility by you guys to provide accurate information. And we're going to continue to try to work with you as I'm doing right here, right now, and as the president did just a couple of hours ago.
You know, John, you wouldn't be able to ask those questions without those credentials in this room?
I'm sorry?
You wouldn't be able to ask these questions that you're here to answer without these credentials.
And you are. So you're clearly sitting right here asking them right now.
Wow. That she puts Cecilia Vega in her place.
And then Sarah Sanders took Cecilia Vega's press credential away.
No. Thought, give me that. I need that right now.
It's a combination of being completely in the tank for the left and also being an idiot and just not listening to what's being said and not thinking through. The idea that a press credential and a freedom of the press are inextricably linked, as Gallagher properly said. You don't have a constitutional right to a press credential to the White House briefing room, the White House press room. You don't. Nobody's shutting down an outlet. Nobody's engineering a state takeover of an outlet. And, you know,
reporters got their panties in a bunch. They saw President Trump tweet. Why do we work so hard in working with the media when it is corrupt? Take away credentials? ? And yeah. Everybody sees like, hairs on fire.
Right, yeah, it's right.
What about my J-O-B? That's not right. Our First Amendment to free speech.
It's the state takeover of the media. It's a chilling effect on free speech. All the things that have been said about Trump.
He's just pushing their button.
Yeah, right. I think that's right.
Poking the bear.
I think that's right. And also, it raises the profile on the illegitimate reporting that many of these outlets and many of these reporters are doing. And Sarah Sanders gave two concrete examples in her response.
Yeah.
I thought it was
Melania Trump wasn't living in the White House. What was the other?
That Mike Pompeo was AWOL when he was flying to North Korea to get the hostages. And the point is that you write whatever you want. And I think Trump and bring it. The more you come over the top at me, the more it redounds to my benefit. So the last thing Trump wants is the press to go away. And of course, as Nicholas Kristof at the New York Times and others have observed, frankly, if they're being honest with themselves, the last thing the D.C. press corps wants is Trump to go away.
Oh,
they love
this. This is, it's ratings gold, baby. Huh? Do you like the way I said that?
Yeah, it's great. Like a journalist.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey dot pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
You know, everything is hyperventilation and breaking news and the end of Western civilization, the end of a representative republic. And they're just, they've marginalized themselves with their overreactions and overstatements and shoddy reporting. And they're just so out to get Trump that they can't help themselves, it seems. Steve in Hinsdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I'm convinced now that the dumbest college kids major in journalism. They can't succeed in any STEM stuff. And when you watch these journalists, the field has just really declined. And in fact, Prof, you have a law degree. Why don't you go back into law and get out of journalism? You're just killing your career.
This is
thanks,
journalism.
Guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Steve.
Well, I think the worst, every journalist should take an intro to law course because they're covering things where if there has to be attribution. If not, they could get sued. And I don't think they realize that. That's what, you know, you would be a great reporter. Let me hear you say, reporting live from 26 and Cal, Dan Proft, Fox 32.
Come on. Hey, look, snow. Dan Proft reporting from the Edens. Hey, residential kitchen fire happened here. Dan Proft reporting live from the South Side.
My favorite. Remember?
Hey, crack up on the Dan Ryan. Dan Proft reporting from 35th.
My favorite. Remember Phil Walters from NBC?
He was brilliant.
I mean, he was a brilliant man, a brilliant writer. One time he said, reporting live from a, where am I?
And he was in studio.
He was out on the street. It was funny. I loved him.
The best is the shots, the live shots that where you're in front of something that really has no relevance to the story. Why are you in front of City Hall? Because you have to have like some backdrop, like you're out in the field.
Well, yeah.
But it's all silly.
And any of these, you know, consultants come in there to like grab the door and say, you know, and this happened at NBC for a while. They want us everything to be in a minute. This is City Hall. Grab the door and say, the door's locked tonight, but earlier today in this building, sparks were flying. Roll tape. It's so stupid. Yeah. Or walk through the door, do something, you know, pick up something. So it was dumb. I just sit there and just listen to all that.
We should have you do some side work as the Morning Answer's court reporter. I mean, that's like Doug Llewellyn quality drama right there.
And really sell it. Say it with your eyes.
Yeah.
And talk like this.
Yeah.
Morning Live.
Why do you think nobody under 70 watches the network affiliate newscast? I wonder. What happened on the Dan Ryan today? Somebody, Cheryl, tell me what happened. I'm interested in the murder du jour. I want to see some cross promotion for network programming. Let me flip on. Who's on CBS? Who's on Fox?
Fox is Corey McFerrin and Don Hasselbrook.
Don Hasselbrook. Don Hasbrook or something?
No,
it's not Hasselbrook.
Uh-huh. Hasselhoff?
It's Don Hasselhoff. It's Elizabeth Hasselhoff.
I don't know what her name. Do you watch any local news?
No.
What if you get interviewed by, say, ABC7 or BBM? Do you watch yourself?
No, I never watch myself on TV. I don't, or even the live stream. I'm very self-conscious about my hair.
Let me see. You still have your hair.
Yeah.
Let me see the spot in back.
There's no spot.
Well, I'll decide.
No, I don't have a fryer tuck.
Is there any thinning?
No.
What did you call it?
No, I don't have a fryer tuck. I don't have that. I don't have the hole in my haircut. I'm good. My hair is luscious. It's anchor quality.
It's luscious.
It's anchor quality, but I'll... Mm-hmm. No, I'll never. I mean, unless Sinclair calls.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And Amy, you know the example of Schrodinger's cat, that thought experiment. Schrodinger's cat both simultaneously alive and dead.
Yes.
A cat in a steel cage with a bit of radioactive material.
Why do you have to re-victimize me?
And, you know, so it's a criticism of the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics, as you know. And the cat is simultaneously alive and dead. Well, that's the same thing for a Romanian man, Constantine Reliu.
I think I'm wearing off on you.
Reliu?
You're getting my pronunciation of names disease.
No, Constantine.
Constantine.
Reliu?
Reliu.
After more than 20 years of working as a cook in Turkey, the 63-year-old returned home to Romania to discover that his wife had officially registered him as dead. Since then, he's been living a legalistic nightmare, trying to prove to authorities that he is, in fact, alive. He faced a major setback last week when a court in the northeastern city of Vaslui, refused to overturn his death certificate because his request was filed too late.
Sorry,
you're still dead. I'm a living ghost, he told the AP in a phone interview from his home in northeastern Russia. I'm officially dead, although I'm alive. I have no income, and because I am listed as dead, I can't do anything. I'm not sure whether I'm divorced or not, because I'm not sure whether I'm alive or not. I'm not sure whether she's married to someone else or not. Nobody will tell me because people don't want to speak to the dead.
Oh, my gosh.
You believe in ghosts. He is a ghost.
He's real, but that should be reversed.
I love
it. Can't he fight that?
The idea that government.
Like, sorry, it's such a government red tape.
It's such a commentary on government. I'm sorry, you're dead because, you know, you had to be here by 3 o'clock.
Right, and it's 3:05, and I'm sorry, we can't overturn this.
Still dead. Maybe come back tomorrow and we'll reinstate your.
Oh. So what's he doing now?
He's.
Did he get a cat?
Yeah. Can't fly on United Airlines either. Yeah, so
I'm sure his TSA pre-check's gone.
He is still working on establishing to the Romanian government that he indeed does exist. So we'll keep you updated
if he comes back to life.
It was like Lazarus.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And Gina Haspel endured worse than waterboarding, worse than 5 hours of Maroon 5 songs being directed at you in a confined space, questioning from the likes of Kamala Harris and Jack Reed from Rhode Island. Listen to this torturous exchange between Jack Reed and Gina Haspel. Again, it's about the enhanced interrogation program, which is what dominated the hearing. And to try and get to the morality of it, Jack Reed tried to flip the script on Haspel and say, what would you have done, how would you have received it if a CIA officer had been waterboarded by a terrorist?
If one of your operators were captured, subjected to waterboarding and enhanced interrogation techniques, which you, I believe, supervise, would you consider that to be moral, since perhaps the other entity did not have legal restrictions, and good tradecraft, as you appeared to do when you were involved in it previously?
Senator, I don't believe the terrorists follow any guidelines or civilized norms or the law. CIA follows the law.
Excuse me, madam. You seem to be saying that you were not following civilized norms and the law or anything else when you were conducting those self-same activities. If that's the analogy you're going to draw.
Senator, I'm sorry. Can you I can't.
Very simple. You have an operations officer who is captured. He's being waterboarded. I've asked you very simply, would you determine that to be immoral and something that should never be done, condoned in any way, shape, or form? Your response seems to be that civilized nations don't do it, but uncivilized nations do it, or uncivilized groups do it.
The United States does it.
Civilized nation. A civilized nation was doing it until it was outlawed by this Congress.
Senator, I would never obviously support inhumane treatment of any CIA officers. We've lost CIA officers over the years to terrorists. I just gave an example. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed personally killed a Wall Street Journal correspondent and filmed that. I don't think there's any comparison between CIA officers serving their country, adhering to U.S. law, and terrorists who, by their very definition, are not following anybody's law.
So yeah. every politician wanted their I gotcha moment, and it just didn't happen.
And Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, by the way, since Gina Haspel mentioned him, mm-hmm. Along with John McCain, does not want to see Gina Haspel confirmed to be CIA director. Interesting bedfellows. Kamala Harris tried the same game with, Haspel.
Oh, yeah.
Do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred...
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking do you believe they were legal. I'm asking do you believe they were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA did extraordinary work to prevent another attack on this country, given the legal tools that we were authorized to use.
Please answer yes or no.
I mean, it just went on and on and then. And finally, they changed topics.
And Tom Cotton had a moment there. I mean, again, this is all to everybody gets their turn at the wheel to be on TV. So they have clips they can send out to their constituents about
free advertising
what they did. But Tom Cotton did make a valuable point when he went back in time to the period that everybody is questioning Haspel about and reminded his colleagues about some senior level officers that were in CIA at the time that went on to, say, be CIA director, like, oh, I don't know, John Brennan.
These programs were, to the best of your understanding, approved by the commander in chief, legally approved by the attorney general, and supported by the director of the CIA, who I point out at the time was the former Democratic staff director of this committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
You said that you were not a senior manager when those programs were created. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was John Brennan, a member of the Senior Intelligence Service and the deputy executive director at the time, a senior manager, in your opinion?
Senator, I believe Mr. Brennan was the deputy exter of the agency at that time.
And you'd consider that a senior manager position at the CIA?
I believe it's the number four position.
For John Brennan, who was confirmed to be the CIA director by the following members of this committee: Senator Warner, Senator Feinstein, Senator Heinrich, Senator Collins, Senator King, Senator Burr, Senator Manchin, Senator Wyden, and Senator Rubio.
The good news for Haspel and the president is that... Senator Manchin just mentioned voting to confirm Brennan, has also announced he's going to vote to confirm Haspel, giving it bipartisan support and really a glide path to her installation as CIA director. For more on this, as well as the hostage rescue in North Korea, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Jed Babin. He is a former United States Deputy Undersecretary of Defense and a contributor to The Washington Times and American Spectator. Jed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys.
How many hours of that Haspel confirmation hearing did you log yesterday?
Oh, about 10 minutes worth before I got fed up and turned it off.
That's about right. That sounds about right. Any issues with Gina Haspel and her involvement with CIA at the time of the enhanced interrogation program in the 2000s?
Well, Gina Haspel's issue that I am concerned about is that she appears to be a... Clapper Brennan type of person who is not really interested in doing what we need to do to do all of these, to deal with the terrorists.
What do we need to do?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things we need to do, which we're not doing. Number one, we need to start filling up Gitmo again and subjecting these guys to long-term interrogation under our terms. We need to be I'm not at this point going to advocate return to waterboarding, although it was both legal, proper, and moral when it was done. But there are
well, was it effective though? Do we get any key information from waterboarding people?
Well, all I can tell you is that in his memoir, George Tenet, who was the head of the CIA at the time, said that the so-called enhanced interrogations, which obviously included waterboarding, produced more valuable intelligence than everything else we got, everything else from any source. So obviously we got some good information from it. And, you know, again, the point comes down to everybody is talking about torture and they're throwing around the word as if it really had a broader meaning than it does. The law, when it was occurred, the law when it, as it was in 2001, between 2001 and 2005, when John McCain grandstanded a change to the law through Congress, the law said that torture was defined very specifically in terms of, well, the intentional infliction of pain, which caused lasting psychological harm. Now, waterboarding, as was demonstrated by the fact that we've been waterboarding our fighter pilots, bomber pilots, special operators for decades in so-called SEER school, survival, escape, resistance, and evasion. That kind of a school. They waterboarded all of those people for a long, long time, and there was no lasting psychological harm. So, therefore, waterboarding was legal. It was not torture. Now, McCain's amendment muddied up the law and made it so that anything that is degrading or, I forget the precise terms, but inhumane, degrading, and so forth treatment was then outlawed. So, sure, I mean, waterboarding and slapping somebody's face are equated under that law now, and everything is torture. So that's a long way of saying that what we did then, we probably should still be able to do, and it did value, it did produce considerable value.
Well, let me ask you this. Despite your concerns about Haspel being a Brennan Clapper type, does the opposition to Haspel from Rand Paul and McCain, is that enough for you to vote for her were you a sitting senator?
Well, you mean the fact that they were opposing it would make
yes.
you support them?
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
The fact that Kamala Harris is against something means that I would automatically be in favor of it, subject to further proofs.
Yes, okay, fair enough. Switching gears, talking about this hostage return, the three Americans that were being held by the North Koreans in advance of this sit-down between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. Were you heartened not just by the return of Americans, obviously, but also President Trump making a note of Otto Warmbier, remembering Otto Warmbier, who was murdered by that regime while on the tarmac, sending a signal to North Korea, just because you did this doesn't mean I've forgotten who you are?
Well, yes, clearly Mr. Trump did the right thing. He has produced so far a great diplomatic success on North Korea. They've been promising, number one, to stop nuclear testing, stop missile testing, and have also already released three American hostages. So those are big wins already. And I think one of the things that has produced that is his cancellation of the Obama nuclear weapons deal with Iran, because Kim Jong-un now has the message that we're not making bad deals anymore, boys. So, you know, if you want to come to the table and really make a good deal that we can verify, fine. But other than that, you know, go pound sand.
Well, what does Kim Jong-un want?
Kim Jong-un wants us to withdraw from the Korean Peninsula. He wants to retake South Korea and unify the South Korea, the Korean Peninsula under his regime. And he wants us, you know, basically get out of the area. So that's not what's going to happen, obviously. And in the meantime, he's, I think, a little bit intimidated by what Mr. Trump has been doing. And quite frankly, we need to keep the pressure on. The sanctions that we have on them are literally strangling that country, although, frankly, he doesn't care because he and his military coterie are very well fed, very well cared for. But, you know, the rest of North Korea is literally living in the cold and the dark.
Yeah, Kim Jong-un really fills out that Hillary pantsuit, no question about it. Jed Babin, former United States Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, contributor to the Washington Times and the American Spectator. Jed, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, GQ has put out a list. GQ. Not that you go to literary, to GQ for literary advice, but 21 books you don't have to read. You know, all of the classics and the celebrated authors of a bygone era, they need to go. because
they're not politically correct.
Right. It's the latest point in time, and the latest people in time are always the best in time.
Well, they yanked To Kill a Mockingbird from one school district in Illinois because it wasn't politically correct.
It's a good example. The Adventures of Huck Finn, this author suggests, nope, that needs to be dumped. You don't need to read Twain. Now, I don't have a problem with what she suggests as a replacement. She suggests some replacements for the books you don't have to read anymore.
Narrative, 50 Shades of Grey?
No. Narrative of the Life of Frederick Douglass, an American Slave. By, Frederick Douglass wrote it, which is also excellent. But she totally misunderstands Huck Finn incredibly. Huck Finn is an anti-slavery polemic, right? People understand this? No, they don't, apparently, including this author. The Rise and the Ambassadors by Henry James. Like, everybody should read Henry James. She says, no, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. You can read that, too. Also good. And here's the kicker. She, you know, dump Salinger, dump Hemingway, dump David McCullough. You know, these people there, too. Dump Kurt Vonnegut. Forget Slaughterhouse-Five because they're too, you know, it's too much toxic masculinity. That basically is through, you comes back again and again throughout this list. Even from some of the men that are opining on these various books. Instead of the Bible, you don't have to read the Bible. Sort of the basis of this representative republic, our founding documents. Don't have to read it. The Holy Bible is rated very highly by all the people who supposedly live by it, but who in actuality have not read it. Those who have read it know there are some good parts, but overall, it is certainly not the finest thing that man has ever produced. It is repetitive, self-contradictory, sententious, foolish, and even at times ill-intentioned. If the thing you heard was good about the Bible was the nasty bits, then I propose The Notebook.
By Nicholas Sparks? No, you're kidding me. Oh.
Agatha Christoph.
Okay, but I'm just saying.
But it would surprise me. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Ryan Gosling with a shirt off replacing the Bible, but I wouldn't be surprised if others suggest that's a suitable substitute as well. Don't have to read the Bible.
Huh. Don't have to read The Lord of the Rings.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
this list goes
Joseph
on.
Heller. Nope, that's not.
No,
get rid of Catch 22. You don't have to read that, too. I love the Bibles on the list because it's, you know, at foolish and at times even ill-intentioned. It's the basis of the greatest country the world has ever seen. I hate to break it to the folks at GQ.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Hey, Joe Walsh here. North Korea would not be happening if not for Trump. We'll talk about it when Freedom Returns at 5.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So it's been arguably a pretty good week of foreign policy successes and promises kept at minimum from the Trump administration, beginning with his announcement on Tuesday that we are out of this glide path to a nuclear Iran deal. And then, of course, culminating this morning with the return of three American hostages from North Korea in advance of Trump's sit down with Kim Jong-un. For more on the Iran deal and what comes next, in addition to the reimposition of sanctions, we're pleased to be joined by our friend, Dr. Zudi Jasser, president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, former U.S. Navy lieutenant commander, and the author of the book, A Battle for the Soul of Islam. Dr. Jasser, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Dan. Thank you.
So let me ask you something. We're talking to Bill Gertz from the Washington Free Beacon yesterday about this deal or the removal of the U.S. from this deal, and the president's remarks directly to the Iranian people as part of his remarks, you know, essentially saying the revolution hasn't served you well for 40 years. I know you don't want this theocratic regime, and encouraging essentially the revolt against the Ayatollah. And Gertz thinks that the raw materials are there for a popular uprising that would depose the mullahs in the next 5 to 10 years and change the nature of Iran and thus the landscape in the Middle East. Do you think that's possible?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, many of us said this was not a deal to start with, let alone now that you look at the timing. I was against this deal from the beginning because we paid up front and got nothing in return. And in the end, basically gave Iran the green light to help do a genocide in Syria and be the worst actors in the region with abandon. So now, as of January 1st, the people of Iran have been rising up against their own people. And Bill is exactly right. There has been a confluence of opportunities, which is, if you look at the people marching, this revolution is even different than the one from 2009. What's different in 2009, it was really based in Tehran. It was more economic. This one is actually an anti-theocratic movement. They are marching in front of the schools of theology, the homes of the imams and the clerics that are driving the Islamic Republic. They're telling them in chants in the mosques that, you know, we don't care about America and the West. We care about Iran, and you are deceiving us into believing that America is our problem. And that's why the Iranians just last week pushed forth an app that they want people to use on their phones, which is called the Death to America app, because they're losing the public campaign against America. So if there's anyone cheering what President Trump did in backing out, it is the people of Iran that are realizing that the Iranians are no longer going to get economic benefits from oppressing their own people, and that money that President Obama falsely told them was going to come to their own benefit of the people of Iran, they saw is actually going to help the military industrial complex of Iran, Syria, and Russia.
How does the Death to America app work exactly? Yeah, does it light up your phone? Does it set it on fire? Is it like a Tesla?
It's as sadly, as funny as that is, it's basically a radicalization app that connects folks that are with the regime. So the regime isn't trying to reach out to the revolution. What they're trying to do is empower that 5-10% of the population that actually agrees with their Sharia theocratic state, and they're trying to unite them to counter that revolution. So it's crazy how much they have continued to radicalize their own population.
And it's, you know, the Iran Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, I don't know if you saw, but he tweets too, not only does President Trump, and he tweeted yesterday about President Trump that this man's corpse will be worm food. So they're not...
As most corpses are.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, they're... and then they burned the American flag or a picture of the American flag, you know, during Iranian parliament. Where is this going to go from here?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you see their poster on their Twitter while the leading supreme leader tweets, but he doesn't let any of his own population tweet. On the other hand, you look at Press TV, Iranian television, their state-sponsored television, and actually they're more tepid. While they are bolstering against the West and saying this is just craziness, et cetera, they're also trying to shore up support from Europe. They're realizing that if Europe also backs up from all the economic kleptocratic ideas they've had to start businesses in Tehran and elsewhere, we had our own Ambassador Grinnell, who within a few days of arriving in Germany told the Germans, you know, you need to start looking at winding up operations in German in Tehran. And the Germans responded by saying, oh, that's offensive. He shouldn't be telling us what to do. When in fact, we finally have a president now and his ambassadors and others that are leading from the front and not leading from behind. And Europe is going to start to realize that these investments in genocidal regimes and their so-called businesses are not going to be a way to feed that monster. And I think the long term is going to be returning to a sanctions regime, starting to punish regimes like Iran and Assad and others for doing what they felt they could do with abandon over the last 8 years. And I think ultimately, like Eli Lake spoke about in Bloomberg, was that the metal of this policy shift will be shown in Syria. If Iran can now realize, and we saw yesterday with the strikes from Israel, if they start to realize, and the strikes from Israel also show that our allies like Israel now know that they have their back. So they're going to see, actually, I think, much greater containment of Iran over the next year or two. And then ultimately, as Bill mentioned, I think, launching of this revolution to much bigger proportions.
Well, one of the concerns by some kind of across the political spectrum who may be not as pro-Israel as, say, I am, or one, you know, along with Jordan, or one erstwhile ally in the Middle East, suggests, you know, this is our Israel pulling us into more conflict in the Middle East. This ratchets up the potential for an Israeli-Iranian conflict or regional war. But it seems to me that Michael Oren, we had on the show, I'm going to go through every guest we've had on the show for the last 2 weeks. Michael Oren, who we had on the show, Deputy Prime Minister of Israel last week, I thought he made an interesting point about what the Obama administration did in terms of incentivizing Arabs and Jews to come together to work together. Obama said he was going to try and do it through the incentive for peace. Instead, he brought Arabs and Jews together through a shared concern about Iranian hegemony in the region. And I guess the question is, can that shared concern about Iranian hegemony that brought the Israelis to, together, at least in some cooperation with the Saudis, for example, is that a foundation on which more can be built to promote long-standing stability in the region?
I think it's definitely a step forward. Sadly, President Obama, by abandoning our Sunni allies, made them go into sort of chaos, where the Jordanians, the Saudis, the Egyptian Sunni governments saw that we became Iranophilic and were basically emboldening their enemies. And Iran was becoming more and more powerful because not only did they now have the West in their pocket, but they had Russia and China. So now what we're seeing is recalibration of the stability, and I put that in quotation marks, stability of the 20th century, where the Sunnis find that we have their back, the Saudis and Egyptians and others, and the Jordanians, and they're actually cheering. I guarantee you there's no tears being shed about the Israeli rockets, no matter how anti-Israel the Jordanians or Saudis are. They've been talking to the Israeli. They like to see pushback against the Hezbollah threat on the northern border there. So I guarantee you they're happy about this. Now, me, as an advocate of the Arab awakening, I hope this is one step forward, but yet ultimately in the next 10, 20 years, just as I advocate for the Iranian revolution, I don't want to see a Middle East where we continue to embolden even the Sunni dictatorships either. But right. Sadly, Obama put us in this position where we've had to reset the stability of the various regimes in the Middle East so that we can then move forward into more domestic movements to destabilize dictatorships that don't share our values.
Are there steps that President Trump should consider taking after the imposition of sanctions takes effect and has some teeth and changes the landscape, you know, over the next 6 months? What else should he be doing to foment that revolt in Iran?
I think ultimately now he needs to start improving. He has a new appointee to the Office of Public Diplomacy, Heather Nauert, the former Fox News anchor who now is going to be working with Secretary Pompeo on, I think we need to start moving into offense. Just as in the Cold War, we had Radio Free Europe. We need to start looking at, and I think John Bolton and Pompeo are going to be doing this, which is the best anti-nuclear program is weakening the Iranian economy, weakening any benefits they may feel into causing trouble in the region. And I think also the metal will be seen in Syria and to decrease the sense of benefit from them having, you know, foreign surrogate wars as they're doing. And also, as Senator Rubio pointed out a couple times this week, he said, we have to put them on notice that if they do anything in Iraq where Shia surrogates for Iran are attacking our allies, be they Kurds, be they the Sunni forces or others, that we will push back. So President Trump, I think, this will work because somebody like President Obama could never have done this. President Trump doesn't have red lines that he just says, oh, by the way. Secretary Mattis and others have made it clear that our red lines mean something. So I think, you know, if they test it, we'll push back. If they don't test it, I think they won't because they know that President Trump and his administration mean what they say.
Speaking of red lines, let's go to Syria. I know you have family there. You mentioned at the outset the idea that removing or walking away from this terrible Iranian nuclear deal may reset Iran's presence in Syria. But there's also word out about a pullback of funding of the White Helmets. Where is Syria from your perspective, and what should the American posture be towards the Assad regime at present?
Yeah, I think, you know, listen, I'm not harboring any illusions that there is a solution in Syria that's clear to anybody. as our families suffer. I was very disappointed, if not depressed, that we've stopped supporting the white helmets. I think that any support to them was in the end, the vast majority of which was humanitarian. Now, can anybody guarantee all of those guys are great actors? No, you can't. But this is one of the worst wars on the planet right now. And we need to have a side there. And that side is not on Assad. It's not on the Islam. And I think what will happen is as Iran has to pay a higher price for creating, you know, missile launch pads and other things in the areas against Israel, they will begin to retract, especially as the economy, you know, becomes weaker in Tehran. They won't have the financing to do so. And I think ultimately, as we look at a Syria strategy, we have to have a long-term strategy, which is to begin to slowly work with those groups. Why not? I would say President Trump's first step should be to reestablish support of the Kurds, both in Iraq and in Syria. So not only did we back away from the white helmet, we backed away from the Kurd support, which sent a horrible signal. So I hope he can revisit that step back. And then once we support the Kurds, we start to support some of those groups on the ground, either covertly, overtly, that share our values, and begin to, I think, look at a Bosnian solution that we used in the 90s, which is have the UN, through a UN protection force, begin to create no-fly zones, et cetera. But that's not something we would do alone. I think once Europe wakes up to what we're trying to do in Iran, they would then do exactly like they did Bosnia, Herzegovina, and Serbia in the 90s.
He is Dr. Zuhdi Jasser, president of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, former U.S. Navy lieutenant commander, and author of the book, A Battle for the Soul of Islam. Dr. Jasser, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.